everybody.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to Home on the RNG, the podcast where we talk about games.
We talk about RPGs. Last time, I just sat here silently because I didn't remember anything about Triangle Strategy. I haven't gone back and replayed it in the two months.
In the 2 minutes between... Right. Oh, the 2 months, you're right.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. In the 2 months between the time you're hearing this, I haven't gone back and played it, but I still think I will.
But today we're here to talk about... Oh, we also have Chris with us.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Chris.
Hello.
And we are here to talk about Breath of Fire 3.
Yay! A game that I can contribute to because I know all about it.
Well, great. Then let's get into personal history.
Play pre-recorded tape. Actually, you can't play the pre-recorded tape in this instance because I didn't play this. This came out on the PS1 initially, but I didn't play it until the PSP. There was a PSP port that came out, and I played that one. But that was still, oh my God, probably almost 20 years ago. So
now, if I remember correctly, Chris, you don't have personal history with Breath of Fire 3.
That is correct. By the time this podcast comes out, I will have owned Breath of Fire 3 for a couple months. I can't predict right now whether I will have played it. I actually just ordered my PlayStation 1 copy of it a couple of days ago and expect it on Wednesday.
But you are fully prepared to talk about music.
Yeah, you can talk about music in video games without knowing the game that well, somewhat.
I don't have any personal history with the game before I played it here. So I will point out it was developed by Capcom. It was released in 1997 for the PS1.
Is it really that old?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That would make it the same age.
That lines up with the other two games.
Yeah, Wild Arms and Final Fantasy VII, about the same age.
Triangle Strategy, really all about the same
time. It is funny that, like, when you think about, like, Super Nintendo to PlayStation, is it being, like, this huge jump in, like, time and stuff?
Yeah.
But, like, Breath of Fire 1 was 94, and I think 2 was 95, and this is, like, 97. It was, like, no time at all.
Oh, one thing I forgot to mention today, as we're recording, it's the 30th anniversary of the release of the 3DO.
How
amazing.
Yeah, I didn't get a cake. I'm sorry.
I watch a YouTube series called, God, now I can't remember what the hell the name of it is. But the point is they review all of the games that came out on this date 30 years ago.
Oh, nice.
So they talk and they mention
the
3DO
games that came out in 1973, 30 years ago in 1973.
Russ, I have bad news.
Yeah. You're going to break some real bad news to me, aren't you?
Right. I got real bad news. Russ, it's 1993.
Yikes.
They're talking about things that came out in 93. Yes. And they are just now... So it's interesting hearing week by week the developments of 30 years ago because, like, the 3DO just came out. Mm-hmm. All right. At this point, companies are still talking about the new Nintendo PlayStation that's secretly being worked on.
Oh, boy.
Right? The Sega CD is still new technology.
Was the Super Nintendo PlayStation thing, did that eventually become, like, that disc add-on for the Super Nintendo?
No, it eventually became the PlayStation.
Oh, it just became the okay.
Yeah, gotcha. So Sony teamed up, teamed up with PlayStation. Well, yeah, first they teamed up with Philips to make the
I remember the CDI
and it
and
became
that
the
wand
CDI.
Of Gamelon. Yeah,
and then they got with Sony, and then decided, oh, we don't actually want to do that. And so after Sony had invested a bunch of money, so they made the PlayStation 1, and they went, screw you, we'll make our own, and made the PlayStation.
Fun,
yeah. Nintendo doesn't play well with third parties.
No. Or 3DO parties.
Ba-dum-bum-tsh.
There is one 3DO JRPG on our list because it is a JRPG that only released on a 3DO called Lucian's Quest. Later got ported to, like, I think the Sega Saturn or something. But
one day we'll get to that. However, I have not played it. What I have played on the 3DO is Dennis Miller's That's News to Me, which is barely a game. It's more of a it's more of just a show of quips from confusing alien man, also real right-wing zealot, Dennis Miller. Right.
I think barely a game was the tagline for the 3DO system.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, but we're not here to talk about the 3DO
anymore. Great thoughts about Breath of Fire 3. Yeah.
Let's move into the story and characters of Breath of Fire 3, because that's what we're talking about.
All it takes is the mention of Dennis Miller, and now Jeff does not want to talk about the 3DO. Bam.
When a young dragon awakes and discovers that he is the last of his kind, he must go on an adventure to find out the truth of what happened to the rest of his people. It's about 40 hours long.
It's about right. He's naked, by the way, when he wakes up.
You play as a naked little boy.
Yeah. It was an experience for me. Well, I say it's an experience
was
for
it
me.
Was it formative?
Seeing that boy butt. But, as I mentioned, I didn't play Breath of Fire 3 till the PSP. I actually played 4 before 3. And 4 has almost, like, Dragon Boy peen.
Well, there's something to look forward to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The story does also feature what I think is a really good time skip, which is very interesting because you do start out as a little boy, Dragon Boy. And you meet other boys and very young adults. And then you go on this long adventure of discovery and trying to... And then there is a sudden and dramatic time skip that you do not see coming, and the world changes, and people grow up, and then you have to reconnect with your party again.
I just thought it was really cute because I like pixel art and sprite work and stuff like that, that when Ryu, your main little Dragon Boy character, wakes up, and when he first has to start, he gets his human form, then he first has to start fighting as a human, he has his little dagger. And he, like, seems scared. He, like, waves it in front of him like he doesn't know what he's doing.
I'm doing the waving gesture for the podcast.
I know. Me too. It's awful. But he does the cute little waving thing. And then he, like, meets the other boys. And they kind of teach him how to fight and life lessons. And then he starts, like,
he becomes a swordsman.
Yeah, he starts waving the dagger like an actual fighter. And then he grows up and he's got his sword.
I did like that.
Waves around. And just because I liked all the sprites and things that we had on those old RPGs. And I just always thought it was very cute when he's just like waving his dagger around in front of him.
So because it is a Breath of Fire game, we do have a Ryu and we have a Nina.
We have a Ryu and a Nina. I was always disappointed in the Nina in this game. She's not, because Nina's a mainstay in my party in all of the other Breath of Fire games. But in this one, I don't find her nearly as useful as Momo, who is the inventor girl.
Yes.
She's like the genius girl. She's a healer, and I find her overall more useful as like a magic user and like a supportive character. So I was always kind of disappointed in Nina in this one.
I can't remember the type of vegetable. Is it an onion that joins
you? It's an onion, yeah.
The onion was a mainstay in my party.
Oh, yeah, because the onion you can make the onion like the best character.
For me, it was Ryu, the onion, and the were-tiger.
Oh, yeah. See, I used Ryu and Rei, the were-tiger, and Momo.
Especially once I learned how you could aim the were-tiger. Because, what the hell. You can learn enemy skills, and there's a particular enemy skill that is basically, hey, attack that guy, which is only useful for the were-tiger because you can have him go into a rage where he's incredibly powerful, but he might attack your own party members. But if you have the, hey, attack that guy skill, you can aim him so he never attacks you. And then it's just wild damage.
Yeah. Yep. I liked him. He is also kind of one of the... Breath of Fire is the series that could have made me a furry, I think, if I had those inclinations, because Rei is quite attractive. And then Krei, who we will definitely talk about again when we review Breath of Fire 4. Their names are Rei and Krei, by the way. but he's the Tiger Man in Breath of Fire 4, and I found both of them incredibly attractive.
I feel like that's what Warner Brothers was trying to do with Lola Bunny and Straight Men.
Absolutely.
If you watch Space Jam, just like, there is no reason for this cartoon to focus so much on that cartoon bunny's ass. But there it is.
And then how angry people were online in the new Space Jam. That
she
was not that she was not as sexy or whatever.
That people have been betrayed.
Yeah. This is a fun episode so far.
I mean, you can't talk about Breath of Fire
without talking about the furry community, at least with that one little, you know. Absolutely.
It's a road divergent in a wood.
So we covered Ryu, Rei, Nina, Momo.
The Onion.
There's the big dragon guy. I actually don't remember his name because I never really used him.
Oh, yeah. I also don't remember his name. I thought he was more of an armadillo.
Oh, he was, yeah. Yeah,
but he had like wings too. He was like a giant armadillo with wings.
That's why I first kind of said big dragon.
But his people were opposed to the dragon race.
Right. Yeah.
They were guardians.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sure we're missing. I'm sure they're.
And then Teepo.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about Teepo. He joins you at the beginning, and then does he come back? I don't know. Spoilers.
Oh, and the horsemen. Remember the horse guys?
I do. The recurring villains that you couldn't beat as little kids.
You can. And I did on one of my playthroughs. You actually can. Yeah, I looked at a YouTube video, and there's like a strategy to actually beat them as Ryu and Nina, as little kids. And you don't get anything from it except some funny dialogue from them. But it was worth doing once.
Yeah. Lots of colorful characters.
Really colorful characters.
Again,
I really love
in the Breath of Fire world, it's amazing how many species grew to be sentient.
Right.
Without just killing each other out.
Yeah. Sentient and hot.
Maybe that's why they didn't kill each other out.
No, they. All right, maybe we should move on.
I could talk about the hot Breath of Fire characters for hours.
So, I just thought that's what we were here for.
Yeah.
The combat system.
Yay!
The combat system is largely unchanged. It is still an isometric angle, a word that I'm now using correctly.
Remember when we didn't know what isometric meant?
When I used isometric instead of first person for like 3 years?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I do. I think
we've grown.
The number of times I think about that, you would not believe.
Yeah.
Because it's all out there. It's all history. Everybody knows.
Yeah, you can't
Jeff
take it
was
back.
Using isometric incorrectly for a very long time.
Can't take it back.
The isometric angle, which I guess was Capcom's way of setting this apart from the first-person style of Dragon Quest or the side-by-side of Final Fantasy, is we will just have the camera tilted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll just have our own little...
Captain Skyhawk style.
Sometimes your characters or enemies get to counterattack. Kind of like in
Wild Arms.
I could not figure out for the life of me what triggered this. It just sometimes it happened. Also, sometimes characters get a free extra turn after a round of combat. I think that's based on their speed stat, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
One of your initial party members is a thief who has a steal ability that also deals damage.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm so excited because I can steal a thing, and even if I don't come away with a thing, I can still do an attack.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy had that for the longest time.
Well, I mean, you have to get the right item. You got in Final Fantasy VI, you got to get the Thieves Glove or whatever to make it mug instead of steal.
Yep.
I never liked that because Final Fantasy has such a low steal rate that like if you damage the enemy, you're going to kill him and not get your item.
Yeah.
Well, then you unequip the glove.
Yeah, no, I did. Just saying. I didn't use the glove very much for that reason.
Like ROM hack thing of Final Fantasy, where they changed steal rates and stuff. That was not interesting. I'm so sorry.
I mean, it was no Obi-Wan Kenobi joke.
Yeah, it wasn't. No.
This game also continues the Breath of Fire tradition of after you beat an enemy, in future encounters, you can actually see their life bar and watch it go down, which is not something a lot of JRPGs do, right? You're just kind of expected to learn, roughly 1.5 attacks kill this guy.
It was innovative. It was kind of an innovation for its time.
And it's something that the series stuck with,
a lot of other people picked that up. From the first game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Every character has an examine ability. If you examine an enemy, your character won't do anything that turn. But if the enemy they examine then uses a learnable skill, which not all enemies do, then there's a chance your enemy will learn the skill. This is where we talked about that guy right there, get him. It's the blue magic of this game.
You actually made me look.
I know, I saw that. Yeah. I said, that guy right there, get him, and I pointed as I was saying it for emphasis, and Russ went, what?
I thought maybe somebody was stealing your dog, and I was really excited.
Don't be mean. Scattered throughout the world are crystallized dragons, and from them you can learn a property. And whenever you want to turn into a dragon, you can select up to three of the properties that you have learned and transform into that style of dragon. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of flexibility. It's actually pretty cool, the amount of variation, but you don't really use it.
Yeah, you don't need it. It's cool, but you don't need to use it.
I mean, every boss battle is essentially create the same dragon using these three skills and just beat the daylights out of the mm-hmm. opponent. Your dragon form costs you basically spell points or mana or SP per round. So you have a limited transformation time, essentially. But there are a couple of forms. Kaiser Dragon, I think, is one of the popular ones.
Kaiser Dragon is really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Once you have figured out or gotten the parts for that particular dragon, like, that's what you do. Yeah. Boss fight, Kaiser Dragon, hit, were-tiger, get that guy. You're done. Those mm-hmm. are your boss fights.
Which, again, I'm kind of disappointed that Nina's not really needed in this game.
No.
You got Rei, and you got Ryu, and you got Momo healing, and that's how you get through the game. I want to point out, we don't talk a lot about graphics.
No, we don't.
But I just want to say, like, I mentioned it before, but I love the, like, character, just the art style, all the enemy looks. The characters are so expressive in this game, and I feel like it's a beautiful game to look at.
It did a really great job at taking the Breath of Fire style from Super Nintendo, mm-hmm. from 1 and 2, and boosting it on the PlayStation, right? It still 100% looks the same, like Breath of Fire, but they didn't feel like, oh, we've got new technology, let's start from the beginning and come up with a whole new look. They just really, I don't know, they enhanced the look without losing the character, which is not how that usually goes. Usually when you hand a company like a brand new technology, they tend to start from scratch,
mm-hmm.
right? But no, Breath of Fire stuck very true to its artistic style.
Yeah. It is quite good. It was... And again, like I mentioned in the Wild Arms episode, this is when I was getting like really into anime. Well, I guess that I played this. It was around the time that it came out. But anyway, it looks like you're playing an anime, which was really cool for me.
Yeah, it's fun to track down the original like art concepts for Breath of Fire mm-hmm. because, I mean, it's very furry-tastic, but...
But they're beautiful. They're beautiful.
A lot of detail, a lot of planning for these characters. I would put them on par with the design work for Final Fantasy because
mm-hmm.
the games never quite live up to, especially in Final Fantasy, the early games, the game's graphics never live up to the design of the characters. Breath of Fire is closer, but the design is as intricate, is as detailed as the Final Fantasy.
What if there was like a Final Fantasy game? I know this is a tangent, but what if they did like a Final Fantasy game that like really used the Amano art style? Like in the game, wouldn't that be amazing? Be nice. Even if it was just some little side game.
Final Fantasy 17 coming out in 2033.
Yeah, I can't wait. I have it marked on my calendar.
Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about regarding combat?
No, I think you really.
Because there's the master system, but I wasn't sure if that belongs here or in Innovations.
I mean, I don't know how much of an innovation it is given. I mean, it is different, but like there was the shaman system in Breath of Fire 2, which was similar, and this I think is what kind replaces of grew it. Out of that. Yeah.
We can talk about it here. Let's expand combat system a little bit. Scattered throughout the world are masters, some of which you are absolutely going to encounter, some of which are hidden, and some of which are useless. And the idea is you take one of your party members and have them train under a particular master. The masters give different stat boosts and skills to their students mm-hmm. based on you leveling up while you're their student.
Yeah.
So, like, here's this master. If you study under him, your speed goes down, but your defense goes up and your strength goes up a little bit, and you'll learn these skills. So every time you level up, that's the way your character's stats level up. This is one of the things that makes The Onion so powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when you get The Onion, he is level one.
Mm-hmm.
Your main character is a much higher level by the time you unlock this master system, yeah. Right? But you take your little level one Onion and you get him under a good master, and he gets these stat boosts for every level.
Yeah.
So people love the Onion because you can make him super powerful. I made him an incredible tank.
Yeah, he is good for that.
The irritating part of the master system is, in order to learn the skills, you have to walk all the way back to the master and talk to them and be like, hey, your student may be ready to learn some skills. And fast travel is not unlocked in this game until near the very end. So continuing the Breath of Fire tradition of obnoxiously making you walk all over the world.
It's a walking sim.
But it is cool to have these hidden secret masters. Because that's the kind of stuff that makes you want to play a game again to find the secret hidden stuff.
Yeah. Good overall.
So let's go ahead and talk about innovations.
Mm-hmm.
It does have hidden items, which I always, that's a pleasure of mine. It is a 3D game with the R button letting you rotate the camera, which you need to do in order to solve some puzzles.
Yeah.
This is one I hadn't seen before. So if you die in battle, after the battle, you're resurrected with 1 HP. That's normal. But if you do that, if you end the battle dead, there is a chance of your maximum HP being reduced until you are able to get to an inn or a camp. And it can stack multiple times. There is a penalty to letting the game revive you post-combat. Your character becomes weaker and weaker and weaker until you rest at an inn.
I never even really realized that, I guess, because I didn't have that problem. But that is interesting.
Yeah, I didn't encounter it too much. But I've never seen a game that actually comes up with a penalty for utilizing that resurrection system. The game does a great job of letting you know when equipment you're buying is an improvement, and it also offers the feature where if you buy multiple of the same item, you can equip it to all of your party members. Like, okay, I bought three of these. Equip it to that person, that person, and that person.
Normally, things we take for granted now.
Yeah, well, no. Normally, if it's multiples, you can equip it to one, and then you gotta later equip it to the rest of them. It's very unusual for a game to let you...
I've just been... playing Trails into Reverie, and you can do that in there, but that is a 2023 video game.
Yeah, that's so true. There are no random encounters in the overworld, although there are occasional random generated treasure areas that have battles in them. So
remind me, I do know about this game, but remind me, is it this and Breath of Fire 4, or is it just Breath of Fire 4 where you have the little map and you walk on the little road on the overworld?
That's this.
And then you can pick, so it's both of them. Okay, yeah. And there's like the little exclamation point, and you can like fight the battle, or you can go into... Okay, thank you.
There's the fairy village,
mm-hmm.
which is like a whole other game, right? It's a very optional part of the game where you help fairies grow a village by assigning them tasks like gather food, build buildings, clear land. How about you take on a job? You should be a shopkeeper. Oh, wow, that unlocks rare items for me to buy?
Yeah.
It is a whole mini game of allocating the resources of these fairies, and you have to make sure you gather enough food to feed them or the fairies start dying. Yeah, it is a whole other game.
Yep.
Speaking of other games, I am looking at my notes for this, and this is like a paragraph and a half that I wrote about this. Oh my goodness. So many one-time games, right?
Right, yes.
Let me operate a crane. Let me pull water from a well. Let me dredge the ocean for parts. All of these various puzzles, all of which basically require different timing and pushing buttons. It's a little bit like Final Fantasy VII, where it constantly had those weird one-off little games like the marching game or the dolphin jump game
those
or the swimming
are
game.
The kind
CPR
of,
game.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of things that I don't miss about older RPGs.
I feel like every Breath of Fire game has one moment that just drives me utterly nuts. In the first one, it was playing Postal Service between the old people right before the end of the game. Mm-hmm. In this one, it was the sushi quest. There's a part of the game where you have to deal with a mayor who hates eating fish. And the solution is to go to where he was raised and find out how they prepare a very special kind of fish there. It's sushi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you go to a shack where they make sushi, and they say, sushi is super, super popular here. We serve it all the time. That guy right there is eating it right now. And you say, great, I need some sushi. Can you teach me how to make it for this guy who doesn't like to eat fish? I want to give him sushi. And they say, sure, no problem. I need you to go gather four ingredients scattered literally all over the world. Don't you make this all the... Isn't that guy eating it right there? You need... Why do I have to travel all over the world to get four ingredients? You make this all the time. Yeah. But no.
I just don't like you.
This is what it takes to save the world, okay?
So.
Is you need to travel around collecting ingredients for sushi.
Travel all over the world, collect the four ingredients, come back, do a one-time super obscure minigame to build the perfect sushi with the perfect ratio of like wasabi to fish to seaweed. It doesn't give you a lot of hints as to how to attain this perfect ratio, and so you have to try multiple times to make the perfect sushi roll so that you can help a man who hates eating fish eat some fish.
It was my favorite part of the game, so I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
It does still have the fishing minigame, speaking of fishing.
Oh, yeah. Every Breath of Fire.
And it's fun, and the fish are actually very useful items. Mm-hmm. And then again, you don't unlock fast travel until the end of the game. And sometimes it still requires you to walk through combat areas that you're vastly overleveled for, which is just kind of irritating.
Especially for the enemies.
All right, slimes. Three gods just walked into our woods, and we're going to teach them who's boss. Yeah, I know that one can shoot laser out its eyes. That one's a literal dragon. But that onion fella, he only has the strength of 30 men. We can take him. Mm. You and me, slime, let's do it.
I think you're writing a light novel right now.
That's what I have for innovations.
Yeah.
Was there anything else?
Thorough list.
Thank you.
Very good.
Well.
You kind of unlocked a trauma for me talking about that sushi.
Oh, my God. Well, as a palate cleanser, let's go to Chris.
Oh, hi.
And let's have Chris talk about the music.
All right, so this is once again me talking about music for a game I have not played myself yet. Been meaning to play it for like 20 years.
Well, there's a really great sushi mini game that you should keep a little eye out for.
I was awake for the rest of the review, almost.
So my little bit of research tells me that it was a team of two women who composed the music for this game.
The composers are two women who have composed many things for Capcom. Oh, sorry, I was interrupting.
Well, it's just, first of all, I like pointing out when it's female composers because I feel like it's a largely male-dominated industry, like so many industries are.
I feel the opposite when it comes to Capcom.
Oh,
Capcom has employed a lot of women for composing purposes.
And the only other small thing that's interesting to me is that between the two of them, they did a lot of work on the Mega Man Battle Network series, which is a series we will play eventually.
So, the two composers are, I missed them in my notes. Oh, Yoshino Aoki and Ikari Kaida. That's just one Kaida. I was just trying to repronounce it, but it came out the exact same way twice.
I want my name to be Ikari Kaida.
Yeah, I know. The name's so nice, we named it twice. So, yeah, they did the soundtrack to this game. Now, the thing that you're going to notice about this versus Breath of Fire 1 and 2, which I'm also slated to talk about at some point, is that the soundtrack is a lot more modern. There's a lot more jazz elements as well as funk elements and even pop elements. So yeah, just from the beginning, even like you can kind of start to hear this typical JRPG like composition turn into like something that's a little bit more danceable and, like, you know, feels like you need a fancy drink with. Some highlights for me, I really like the song Escape, which actually has three variations. Also, the Woods theme, which the Woods theme was one of my favorite, the forest music from Breath of Fire 1, and they made a really good one for this one called Falling Green. It's the music for Cedar Woods. Mm-hmm. The Overworld theme is called Casually, and I like that one a lot. There's also Walking the Road, which I imagine must play while you're walking on a road. Battle for Tomorrow is a really good one. That's the boss theme. Really enjoyed that one. But yeah, it's just like, you know, you'll just be going through the game, and all of a sudden, you know, some funky bass line will, like, happen, and, you know, it's a very kind of joyful soundtrack, especially as opposed to Breath of Fire 2, which is like 50% dour.
Yeah,
I would say.
Now that you're talking about it, just the whole vibe of the game, I think, is more joyful.
Yeah, yeah.
Than
it's
the predecessor.
Yeah, the music definitely, for sure. Like I said, you know, y'all know about the game, but the music definitely tells me that. The other notable thing about it that I looked into is also that our two female composers both sing the ending credits theme.
I didn't know that.
It's called Pure Again, and it's just this pop song that they both sing on, and they both do a great job. And I think that's so delightful that you have two, you know, female composers on a video game who decide to do a duet for the ending. Like, how could you get any better than
right.
that? I never even heard of that happening before. So that was my favorite part of the OST is the ending credits, which I usually don't try to talk about ending themes because I like people to get there themselves, but that's such a standout thing that just happened, and it really doesn't spoil anything except definitely stay through the credits.
Yeah, yeah.
To listen to that. And that's all I have to say about the music.
Well, great.
Well, that's fun to know.
Yeah,
I didn't get sang it themselves.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to that again.
Yeah.
In fact, maybe I'll put it here as the transition to our final thoughts.
Well, as you can tell from the review, I hated this game. I'm just kidding. No, I love this game. It is beautiful to look at. It is fun to play. And I highly recommend it. And I give it 5 dragon aspects. Was that what they were called? I don't remember now.
Probably.
But anyway, like 5 aspects out
properties?
Of 5.
I really wanted to like the first and second Breath of Fire games. I really wanted to like them, and I just couldn't. Right? I like this one. Yeah. This is easily the best Breath of Fire that we've played.
That we've played so far.
So far. Yeah. It feels like it's finally found its feet. It feels like the team finally really figured out what worked and what didn't for the most part.
Yeah.
I give the game a B+. It could have done with fewer of the mini games, especially the stupid sushi quest.
Right.
There should have been a better way to deal with the masters rather than a bunch of backtracking and talking whenever you wanted to learn the new skills. Because the game was very linear, except for times when you had to do a bunch of backtracking for random side bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like this was an era of games where they were taking ideas they had for, like, the SNES era, and then they were really able to bring their vision to life on the PlayStation.
Yeah. I really like this game. Yeah. Finally, a Breath of Fire that I can enjoy.
A breath of fresh air.
a breath of fresh fire. Yeah. We all saw that one coming. So, Russ, if they want to play Breath of Fire 3.
I know you can play it on, like, the Vita, if you have a Vita. Or like the
not for much longer, and maybe not by the time
they
hear that.
That's true. Yeah, because I don't think it has been released for anything since.
I think
PS1
3 and 4 might be
classics.
In the PS store
for like PS5.
I think they might.
Hopefully they are.
I don't remember seeing them. I would have bought one.
I could be wrong. Well, we are not prepared for this section.
Yeah, no, we aren't. I only know 1 and 2 are on the Switch because those are two games that just get released on every Nintendo console, but they can't do 3 and 4 because those are Sony PlayStation games. But yes, try if you can still get it on your Vita, do that and look on the store. See if it's on PS5. I don't know.
So a quick round of plugs. It's been a while since I've done this, so I'm going to very shamelessly plug myself here. I have written two books.
Kinky.
In theory, I'm working on two more books. One of the two books I've had published are collections of autobiographical humorous essays, largely humorous. There are some sad ones in
there. My mom's a big
there.
Fan.
Oh, that's very nice. Yeah. I like them.
I'm not,
I think they're very good. Sure.
So.
I can understand. Yeah. It's not for everybody. Any online bookstore, if you look for The Great Platypus Caper or The Coconut Monkey Horror by me, Jeff Hillary. I'm working on a third one of also humorous, short autobiographical essays. I'm also working on a fantasy novel. We'll see if I ever finish either one of those. Chris?
For plugs, I'm going to talk about my band, Super High Tops. Speaking of funky, we are a video game cover band. We specialize in soundtracks that originally were funky, and we just kind of keep that going. If you want to find us, our main presence is on YouTube, where you can find us at Super High Tops VGM. That's high, like H-I. And then VGM is like video game music. And yeah, we just recently released a video covering a couple of songs from Hylix 2, which is a very bizarre JRPG from the independent realm.
Very cool.
Very nice.
Rush, did you have anything you want to plug? It doesn't have to be something of your own.
No, it can't be because other than this podcast, the only thing that I do is curl up in a cocoon in my bed and watch TV.
So
or
Russ
play
would
video
like
games.
To plug curling up in a cocoon.
Yeah, I really would.
I like
actually.
That. I will be buying that.
Yeah, I don't really have anything else to plug other than just curling up in a cocoon.
Well, what's something people should enjoy?
I mean, people should enjoy their lives and just
Russ
spending
is plugging
time
your life.
Loved ones. I don't know.
Hey, it could be worse. He could have said he was plugging your mom. So
I had something. Yes. That
stop consuming.
We do keep saying plugging, which makes me think of butt plugs, which.
All right.
I'm
so thank you for joining us here on Home on the RNG.
Yes. Thank you for joining us. This was a delightful episode. I enjoyed this game and enjoyed our discussion.
Next time, we're taking a new journey into a new series on the final frontier, Star Ocean 1.
It's an ocean of stars.
Wow.
We'll see you guys there.
Bye.
On the RNG is a presentation of Mad Centaur Productions. You can find Jeff on YouTube at youtube.com/centaurproductions or on Twitter at Jeff Centaur. You can find Russ on Twitter at RussMac25. You can find Chris on Twitch at twitch.tv/LiarExaggerate or on Twitter at EnrichFlavor. Thank you for listening, and remember to save your game before powering off this podcast.
This really is an ASMR podcast.
Well, I'm not even trying to do that right now. Okay, there we go. I was like, it was loose. It was loose. It was a loose goose. Goosey Lucy. Turkey Larky. Henny Penny.
Welcome
Foxy
back.
Foxy Loxy.
I thought I waited it out. I thought I had it.
By the way, I just looked up what you were doing at the beginning of the podcast. That's called rhyming reduplication.
Oh.
That's where you're like hanky great. Panky. That's where you just take a word and rhyme it with a different thing.
Nice.
Hurly burly. They also have boogie woogie written here.
I love me some boogie woogie.
Some hoochie coochie.
Oogie boogie.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
anyway,
nice.
I realized I was like, I know the name for that, but I don't quite because I only read it the other day. But then I remembered where I read it, so I looked it up again.
It's an educational nice. Podcast.
Yeah. Rhyming reduplication, right. Folks. There you go.
Very good.
We are here to blow your
mind. And you know I didn't pay attention in school from last episode when I didn't know that Fiji was a country. So, yeah.
As we all sit here drinking water with the name of the country on it.
It even says on the bottle of water.
Yeah.
Well, it says it's an island. It doesn't say it's a country.
This is more informative than school. I was thinking of Mount Fuji, but this is not Mount Fuji. That's different. I apologize to all of our Japanese listeners because I know Mount Fuji is really important to you, and it's beautiful. So.